chemical composition, give you the history, the genetics, the biological background. It will be data overload. If, on the other hand, you ask a question, I would like to know the genus of Digitalis and relevant information to its effects on angina. It will tell you the background that you requested and the effects of Digitalis on angina. Now, if you go the other way and say that I'm requesting information on Digitalis, I need the genetic background and interaction with heart palpitations and angina in connection with the chemicals that are derivative used in third dimensional earth medicine on controlling heart problems.
You got
Yeah. But I apologize to our scribe. But by asking that question, you have given it a very narrow field and conflicting field as well. And the computer will ask you for more information or say, it's unable to comply. So that will create a problem that the computer will have in interacting with you. You have to ask specific questions, but they have to be worded in a way that is understandable by the computer.
All right, because when I try to access it to ask it about, the relationship between the internet and brain, it said something about cannot comply, not enough data for answers. I had to read.
Well, you've given it, in actual fact, you gave it the opposite. It could have given you information overload. But the computer is, my computer is set up in such a way that you have to ask specific questions. If you asked Tia's computer, which is actually the same one as mine, same mainframe, but she has different specifications on her terminal. I have mine focused very narrowly because of medical word searches. For example, let us take glandular fever. I want information on glandular fever. It will give you all your glands and all the relevant fevers and how they interact and how each fever interacts with each gland and particular illness. Guess what you get? You get about 3 hour dissertation. That's a waste of time. So let us say I want information on, I'm trying to think of a good brain that would give a good example. And that all the answers I can think of would be too long-winded at this time and too hard on the poor little fingers for typing. Okay. Let us say that I want
Thyroid.
thyroid. I'll give you a dissertation and a half of that if you want. Tia's got a better analogy. Tia says that I ask my computer for information on Bill Clinton from January 1st, 1997 to January 7th, 1997. My computer will ask for more detail on what I'm looking for. My computer would ask for specific topics, or in actual fact, it would say, unable to comply, too much information or too little information. So you have to focus down onto a narrowed field. Let us say I want information on Bill Clinton from January 1st, 97 to January 5th, 97, in connections with speeches on foreign policy of Northern Ireland concerning Sinn Féin. It will scan all his speeches of that period from the 1st to the 5th. It will scan all the references in his speeches of Northern Ireland. It would then scan looking for Sinn Féin. And it will give me the one speech that he made concerning. Tia says that there weren't any speeches made at that time about Sinn Féin. So by keying the word searches and wording them in such a way, cuts down on a lot of time. Instead of sitting there and giving a dissertation like you tend to do, Russ, it will give the computer something to mull over and it can give you a lot of information. But on the other hand, if you say you want information on Bill Clinton and Sinn Féin, again, it can give you too much information.
Right. Well, as it turned out, we got along quite famously after that.
Mm-hmm. It's a matter of learning back.
Yeah, I just basically started wording it more toward a specific topic of the brain or the internet.
You have to specify exactly what you want.
I need to take a break on this tape for a second. We have a string.
I'm not really good at answering questions like that. I try to do the best I can. I'm always much better. Okay, any more questions?
That's good for me. Yeah, it's basically you working on your computer, I think. The topic of that particular session. Anything you'd like to add to it?
Patience.
All right.
Next time you call my computer a stupid computer.
Did I say that?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably just that point, just after that first question. When I did. Yeah. I was a little frustrated.
Yes. My computer tells me everything.
Well, I mean, it was a good learning experience for me in the fact that, it was the first time I've sat down and actually worked with it.
Yes, a learning experience. Don't have any of those, do we, Russ?
Once a day.
Oh, once a day only? Okay.
Bye, love.
Okay, let us address Kara's off-the-record answer to do with the pathways and predestined events. Certain events are predestined, but they occur and are planned in the period between death and rebirth. That, for example, you need to learn how to interact with someone. The situation is set up where it is necessary to struggle for the lesson to be learned, to overcome that lesson. And if it is not overcome in this life, then you have to do it all over again until you do get it right. A good example of predestiny is a entertainment called Groundhog Day. And life can be looked at like that. There are a lot of little things that interact. Little events that occur that don't seem important. And the majority of them aren't. There are certain events that are predestined that you plan in that waiting period that you cannot change. And it is a matter of learning to overcome the pain. For example, I believe in the entertainment. There is an old gentleman that the weather person that is going through the same day over and over again tries to help, tries to stop him from dying. what he has to learn is not that he can save this person, but the fact that it's necessary, that there are some things that you cannot change. But these predestined events are planned in such a way that they give you options for change. For example, buying a new jacket, a nice leather jacket. The option is to buy whichever colour that they happen to have there. Let us say that they have a red, a white, and a blue one. You have four possibilities. You have a short jacket, a knee-length jacket, or an ankle-length jacket. So you have 9 different possibilities and options. And key events are like that. You have certain ways that you can handle the event. Let us say that you are in an environment where you meet somebody and you disagree with them. You have several different ways to deal with the problem. For example, you can deal with it by brushing it off. You can deal with it by addressing the situation and discussing it rationally or irrationally or ignoring it, arguing about it, getting emotional, not getting emotional, making the person understand from your point of view, understanding from their point of view. There are many different possibilities. And those events are designed on the path of life for you to analyze and look at the options and select the correct option that feels right, that causes the best effect for not only yourself, but for the person involved. Okay, let us look at Kara's computer comments. We can go back over that at a later time and look at the healing aspects, but at this time, it is mainly to do with the computer on the base and the different terminals.
What's funny is none of the stuff we got on the tape is all the stuff that you just discussed that we will put on the internet. But nobody can understand where it came from. But it was so good, I'd hate to not put it on there. You described that quite well.
Well, the analogy?
Yeah.
Yes, that is rather unfortunate how that happened.
I will figure something out. We'll fake it.
Well, I'm sure Anne has a fairly good recollection of what was discussed. Okay. I will hand back to our resident ring mistress, who should have gone before she sat down. And in the meantime, do you have any more questions?
No.
Okay.
Glad to.
Hey, okay, I'll put on the next person.
Oh,
I'll be back, hopefully.
Carrie.
Yo!
Just go rush off real quickly.
Yeah, like an express train.
Carrie, this is Anne. Anne, this is the crazy one.
Yo!
Hello.
Hello, greetings.
You're the one that says, yo, dude, do that.
I do. Watch yourself, dude. Okay.
What's up, Don?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
According to his predictions, the Dow, probably my blood pressure. What else? Leah's anxiety. That's about it, really.
Oh, we found a picture of Carter.
Oh, good. About time.
Yeah, it took me a while to find.
Mm-hmm. Which one is it?
Oh, it's the one on a Japanese manga one.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Very tough to track, though.
Okay, let us address a topic near and dear to my heart.
Okay.
Coercion.
Good.
Uh-huh. Okay. Coercion by design. Okay, let us take a little something. Okay, you have a group of felines all sitting around, and there's one cute little feline. Who's listening? And you want that feline to come. The trick is to make eye contact, eye to eye. You look into its eyes and it looks into yours. To make the appropriate thoughts and actions, friendly and open. Now, you have to understand a little bit of the mentality of the feline and the fact that it doesn't trust anybody because its mother doesn't trust anybody. It wants to. It's inquisitive. It will come up and sniff you. It will overcome. So you have to use an incentive to achieve the goal. And by interacting in a positive mental thought pattern, you can cause the feline to come. It may not come all the way up because the anxiety is there within the feline that it doesn't trust anybody except for its mother. So it overrides the call from your mind to come to you. The fear and the adrenaline takes over and it runs. Now, adrenaline and dealing with adrenaline rushes leading up to this is something that can be harmful both to the coercer and the coercee. Okay, now, coercion has to be done carefully, as I've stated frequently in the past. What transpires is that you are giving commands to the person that has to override their thoughts and their behaviors. Now, it has to be done subtly. But let us say that you coerce a little heavy-handed and the person is totally within your control. They have no free will. And you have them and a puppet on a string. And a situation occurs that causes you to fear for their safety or your own safety. Let us say you're coercing somebody to get somewhere in a hurry. And you're sitting in the passenger seat and you've got them doing the foot to the metal routine. And they're going as fast as they can through traffic. And all of a sudden, the light turns red and they almost smash into the back of a vehicle. You have adrenaline overload because the situation that you've put yourself in by coercing them has endangered your life and their life. You lose control of their mind. And suddenly, they have free will of their own. And they suffer from fear going, oh my God, what happened? Why was I driving so fast? I almost killed us. And they do the whole entire guilt trip, but because you were coercing them and you know what they're probably thinking, it flashes back on you even worse. So when you coerce, and you coerce in a way that endangers, you're opening yourself up to all sorts of harmful possibilities to do with adrenaline overload and all the harmful effects that adrenaline overloads can do. The thing about adrenaline is it sits around in the body for months on end. You never need it, and all of a sudden you need it, and it's old, and it's stale, and it tastes funny, and it makes you feel sick. Bah! Don't like adrenaline overloads. Now, if you put somebody in a situation and you're coercing them, and you're not concerned about their safety, and you've got no rapport with them, and they suffer with an adrenaline overload without you going through the adrenaline overload, that you haven't put yourself in a situation, you've put them in the situation, but you've got nothing to do with it except for your coercing. That sounds a little convoluted and complicated, doesn't it?
I love it, David.
But anyway, putting the person in the situation where the adrenaline overload occurs for them only. It doesn't. Because an adrenaline overload will sever the connection. Now, depending on how tight the connection is, depends on how well you're controlling the person. Now, the break in the adrenaline in the connection with an adrenaline overload means that 50% of their adrenaline goes flying into your body, triggering your own adrenaline, which makes the fact that instead of having 100% adrenaline that is being released, you're having 150% adrenaline. So, what's the moral of this little dissertation? Well, it's don't put somebody in an adrenaline overload situation that could happen. It's not good. Unfortunately, sometimes you have to. You have to coerce somebody that is very well suited to do something, a particular task that they don't want to do, but it's for the benefit of themselves and other people and yourselves. Okay, any questions?
I have one that's unrelated to that. Well, it's related, but in a different field. It's a healing question. But you can answer it.
But first of all, let's... Anne, do you have a question?
No.
Okay.
Not right now, thank you.
Yeah, she shook her head now, so
Sorry, I was more concerned with getting liquid down Mark's throat. It sounds like he's been gargling with gas again.
Adrenaline overload caused by the still adrenaline, is it a little bit healthier than to release that adrenaline in some safe format than when it just build up like that?
It's always useful to use adrenaline. After all, sitting around in the body for months and then festering isn't good, is it?
How can you use it?
Yeah, that's what
how
I'm saying. Because I'm
oh, how can
in,
you use
in my working, you know, two jobs right now, I'm not really using a lot of adrenaline.
Yeah.
You think so?
A lot that I can think of.
Adrenaline comes in many, many different forms and can be released in many, many different ways. Being a coercer and having to learn about adrenaline overloads, you learn a little bit about the biology of adrenaline.
Okay.
It can come in the excitement of a new project. You're building a new program or a new computer for somebody that you've never built before. You're a little apprehensive and a little nervous, but there again, you're also looking forward to it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Adrenaline's being released just a little bit, little at a time, to keep the excitement there. Also, yeah, looking forward to doing something for the first time or doing something that you like to do. Could take my favorite pastime, but no, that would be too long-winded. The release of adrenaline comes in many different ways. It can be released in the anticipation of something, waiting for something, something suddenly happening. It can even be released through laughter. Laughing uproariously will trigger adrenaline to be released, and adrenaline causes the heart to beat faster. So you see, adrenaline can be released in many, many different ways.
So you could set up some daily thing that you could do that would release a lot of it at once, or just, you know, those little things all day.
It's better to be little bits at a time, because supposing you need a big adrenaline rush.
It won't be there.
Exactly. But it's being all used up. But if you use a little bit here, a little bit there, it's constantly replacing itself and refreshing it. Has anybody ever had an experience of a sudden adrenaline rush followed by another adrenaline rush followed by another adrenaline rush?
Yeah, all the time. When I was used to fish, it happened a lot.
And what happened towards the end?
Well, you get pretty tired.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there is no more adrenaline left. And therefore, your reactions, which are supposed to be heightened and sharpened by adrenaline, are slowed down because there isn't any adrenaline. So to release it all at once is only a if you need to. But a little at a time is the best way. And it doesn't have to be a daily thing. You know, the joke about it sitting around and festering in your body is a joke. It's there for a reason. And it is used to being sitting around. Over thousands of years, it has evolved in a way that it will survive, you know, not being used for months on end.
Thank you, Kira, for the way to answer that question.
Mm-hmm. Any questions?
I'm trying to think of something in the coercion part. Now, when you're working with someone in coercion, basically, let's say the cat there, which we started off on as far as the adrenaline overload of the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're in essence of working through the adrenaline of that cat to get it to do what you'd like it to do.
Watch.
Oh, that's a kitten.
No, she wouldn't have come into the room unless she was called. She's now sitting quite happily and comfortably. Do you want me to get her to come closer? She's having a real anxiety.
She's found her limit.
Mm-hmm.
She won't go beyond that limit because anything beyond that limit would push her adrenaline and her fear up another notch.
Mm-hmm. It would scare the living daylights out of the cat, and there could be the opportunity of flash over to me,
right,
which in this situation would flash through me back into Mark's body. So I have not only the added responsibility of being responsible for the feline's adrenaline state, but also my own and Mark's.
A lot to be aware of and be responsible for.
So, yeah, it is a big responsibility.
Well, she likes the company.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the human contact, which her mom doesn't, you know, it's not real loving. But she, at the same time, she's real scared of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as you remember, we had all three cats, Gandalf, Edmund, and Doug.
Mm-hmm. See, she's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I started calling her vocally, doing the cat thing, and lost the coercive link.
Hmm.
She's just outside. She'll come back in. It would give her the feeling of welcome there, that she would do it more, that she'd come in. And hopefully it will set things in motion that will give the feline the opportunity to interact more and get more affection and return. When editing this, you might want to put in what transpired.
Right.
The feline.
The wild kitty comes closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should be an easy recollection thing.
Mm-hmm.
Long white spot is coercion of a feline. But there are certain rules that are necessary to obey in connection with coercion. Not endangering somebody only for positive, never for self-gratification, never for self-advancement. However, there are certain little clauses. For example, personal advancement. Let us say, and I do love this analogy, that you are going for a job and you have two children and you need that job. And you go there and you're dressed up as best as you can and you really want the job. Is it right or wrong to coerce the person into giving you the job or considering you more over somebody else? Is it right or wrong?
If you have right qualifications to start the job, it would be right.
Qualifications are irrelevant.
Okay.
From a moral standpoint,
if you're going to be able to give that job, you know, wait.
I see where you're coming.
Yeah.
You are correct in saying that it is the right thing to do. The way that I would answer it is that, yes, it is right because you need the job to take care of your children. So you're not doing it for yourself. Even though you are benefiting initially by getting the job, your children are benefiting. And, of course, you'd want to do the best job that you can so that you can advance within the company and continue working at that job.
Right.
So your answer is yes, correct, and my answer is correct. And it's actually putting those two answers together would be the correct answer. Right. So I can't give any more demonstrations?
No. Well, we had the main demonstration.
I do like to show off my coercion from time to time. Any questions? Okay, what do I do? I'm an engineer, as you probably read in the bios, and I also do coercion, as you just witnessed. Those are my fields of expertise. I also do cartwheels from time to time, don't I, Russ?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, a question for you. How'd the meeting go between Alex and Mike? Guys, didn't work.
No, they wanted to interact with him, and you just shut them out.
Oh,
you'll get over it, hopefully. I hope.
Maybe just that phase.
I've got an idea. Let's get the razor blade and shave half of his moustache off.
Let's not say we did.
Oh, what we could do is shave off.
Better yet, let's not, and you go up and you tell them that's what we did. You have to wait for another, 14 hours to find out that we didn't?
No, that wouldn't be fair. I was thinking, if we shave off this one, this side here, and then shave half its head here.
He wouldn't believe you anyway.
No. If we shaved it off, Tia says no because it's... It's a Celtic nature. Thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pity.
Oh, well.
You can pluck it, though.
That's not much time.
Sorry?
There's still plenty of time left.
Okay. Any more questions?
Nothing.
Okay, we're getting down to getting back to Tia sitting down and giving a dissertation or a mole giving a dissertation. Another one. And a mole does give dissertations.
Well, we do need to fill up more of the tape anyway, so that's good.
Let me see, can I think of anything else to add? Okay, Syrian joke. Okay. Let me see. I've got lots of them. Any that you guys would that aren't mine jokes. Two girls out backpacking. One finds a pile of snow and decides to use her backpack as a sled to slide down it. The other one says, "We did, but we didn't." That's a mind joke, isn't it?
Mind joke, yeah. Nice try, though. Yeah, you just have to be more highly evolved, I guess, to get this stuff.
Okay. That doesn't translate that well, actually. Oh, well, never mind. Loses something seriously in the translation. It doesn't sound right in English. Oh, well.
All right, Daryl. Have a lovely night. See you next week.
Yes. See you later, dudette.
Right.
I'm out of here. I'm off like a wet sock. Okay, now we have that rambunctious one out of the way. Let us let us address Kiri's coercion. That is a mouthful, is it not?
It's a mouthful.
Okay. Now, Kiri, talking about her responsibilities as a coercer, the calling of a feline. Yes, it is a good example. The fact that it is a young, nervous feline is a good example of fine control and Kiri stating her awareness of the potential for harm. Is something that is important and necessary to be aware of in coercion. However, Kiri did skip over certain points that are necessary. When coercing, it is necessary to be aware of the person, but also aware of your environment. Most coercion that is done is simple, thought-out coercion. I want you to do this. Come here. Go there. Sit. Stand. There is very little chance of harm coming in these situations. To take an analogy that Kiri has used a few times. You are at a rock concert and the person in front of you keeps on getting in your way. You coerce them to move to somewhere else or to sit down, or if they are being vocal, coerce them to be quiet. There is nothing wrong in this. This is for your enjoyment and entertainment. It is not for self-gratification. There must be a line drawn there. It is something that you have wanted to attend. The rock concert, the play, musical, whatever. The person in front of you is inconveniencing you. And they're not being considerate. They're not thinking about other people around them. So to coerce them is quite acceptable. Because it is no longer a point of right or wrong, but of consideration and morals. Is it morally correct to talk or to get in somebody's way that is at a place for their entertainment? You are there also to enjoy. So by getting in their way or somebody getting in your way, they are taken away from your enjoyment. And they are not being aware of other people. So morally, it is quite acceptable to coerce somebody to move out of the way, to do something that is an inconvenience. However, it is quite easy to cross over into grey and black areas of coercion at this point. That if you want somebody to move out of the way and go somewhere else and annoy somebody else, they will. So that you have changed their karmic path from annoying you to annoying somebody else that was not in the equation before. So it is better to coerce a person to sit down instead of going away. So you have to be aware of how a small action can cause a bigger action. It is like the proverbial little chunk of snow down a slope. You drop the piece of snow and it starts to roll and it picks up momentum and more snow and so on until you have an avalanche on your hands. And it is the same with coercion and the karmic pathway. You can use coercion to change somebody's karmic path for a possible better outcome. There are other uses of coercion. Any questions at this point?
Yeah, it's much simpler in sixth dimension to determine the uses of coercion than in third, I assume.
Yes, it is. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's just, it's story. I know it's self-evident, but it's just you're able to look at, you know, past lives.
Okay. Yes, it is self-evident. This is better than saying, yes, I'm raising my hand to see if I'm waiting for an extra answer or an extra question. Let me explain more detail. As you stated, yes, past lives are in play. You are aware of your past lives and your past life interaction with the individual. Also, as Tia is fond of talking about, morals. That the moral understanding is more aware instead of black and white. This is wrong, that is wrong, maybe that's right, maybe that's wrong. With the moral equation added in to the coercion and the past life experience added in, then coercion is very cut and dry on, is it appropriate? No. Is it appropriate in this situation? Yes. And you know why. For example, Kiri coercing the feline. And we end up back there. The feline was sitting outside in a cool environment. It wanted attention and warmth. By Kiri pulling it into the room, it starts to overcome the fear of people and other interactions. Now, if Kiri had been very clever about it, she would have had the feline come close, but stay out of arm reach and be warm. Sit in a blanket. Sit in a place where it can watch and be comfortable. To be able to go through the thought processes necessary for that feline to overcome its fear of people, instead of it not comprehending why the compulsion was for it to come into the room. In Kiri's case, it was a demonstration of coercion, plain and simple, on how coercion works and interacts. The moral issue was not addressed, even though I'm sure that Kiri considered the morals. The karmic issue was not addressed because there is no karmic issue to look at between Kiri and the feline. The feline was there just pure and simply by chance as a tool. But taking the moral issue, Kiri did the right thing, not the way that I would have done it, but it was addressed. Any questions at this time?
Yeah. As we get more in tune with our consciousness and our superego, that will enter more into play and will then have a greater step towards that understanding, I assume.
Correct. And the reason being that with the vibrational changes, the necessary interaction of the subconscious and superego comes into play and no longer becomes subconscious. It becomes, back to the computer analogies, subroutines necessary for survival.
Excellent. Good. Thank you. That ties it all together nicely.
Thank you. Any more questions? Okay. I will put Tia back on and allow her to finish up the tape as we have approximately 5 minutes of tape time. Is that correct for us?
Yes, no problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Live long, prosper, and see you next week.
I'll be back.
Hey, he does that so much better on the second time, doesn't he?
He did do it much better the second time.
Mm-hmm. Next ring, I've been walking around going, I want the Uzi 9mm with laser sights. Or Hasta la vista, babe.
Oh, by the way, you've seen Groundhog.